think I have something like 20,000 frequent flyer miles. I think they said that. So I've been on a long journey. Right now I'm in that peculiar state of body-mind where body-mind thinks it's someplace other than here. So at the moment I'm at least half asleep, so I apologize. Anyway, the marketplace beckons. At the retreat, I was leading in England. We were studying the ox herding pictures. And, it turned out to be kind of fun, actually. The last poem, you know, in that series is something like bare of head and foot, I enter the marketplace to mingle with everyday folks. My clothes are ragged and dusty. Yet, I am deeply joyous. I use no life-extending magic. Now, dead trees burst into bloom. So this is the culmination of the series. In some ways, the one of the critical lines anyway is, I use no life-extending magic. This flies in the face of a very old East Asian tradition of, among other things, Taoist alchemy, which sought to establish immortality in this body. But our little friend, the oxherd, disdains life-extending magic. And instead, wherever he or she turns, what was formerly dead is alive. Western tradition is somewhat inclined to hand us or present us with a dead world, or maybe at best, half alive. That is, here are some things that are alive. And here's a bunch of other things that are not alive. This is the standard model, I guess you'd say. So In that model, there are a lot of dead trees. Buddhist practitioners are sometimes compared to dead trees because they are very, very still. And nothing appears to be happening. However, we are reminded that each dead tree has a dragon inside. Humming a little tune. And this is the dragon that, so to speak, animates the whole world. Or rather, the whole world's animation is this dragon. In the ox herding pictures, the dragon kind of turns into an ox. And then the story of those pictures, as you know, is about supposedly finding and capturing and bending the ox to one's purposes. But in the end, that turns out to be just another expedient story. The ox and oneself are not two. A dead tree and oneself are not two. And therefore, the dragon is alive. If you noticed, speaking of trees, we had quite a chop job done on our tree out front there yesterday. So now it's luxuriant foliage, formerly, is now, I guess, in a compost heap somewhere, having been devoured by the chipper. So now it just has some robust branches with just a few little twiggy things on it. So it's true, sometimes some pruning is necessary. It's kind of amazing how much baggage we can accumulate and how quickly. And it's necessary to make a frequent baggage inventory and see what can possibly be left behind. This is a kind of pruning. Eventually, when the practice is mature, we are bareheaded and barefooted. And thus, finally able to enter the marketplace to spend time with ordinary folk and be of some service. But not by offering them life-extending magic. And just by being who we are. this fruition comes from the realization of the not-two-ness of the ox and the ox herder. From maybe maybe not a lifetime, but maybe a lengthy period of giving ear to the dragon's song. It's a little embarrassing, though, sometimes to arrive in the marketplace and notice that you don't have anything particularly. It's a little embarrassing, you know. Especially because sometimes people will, you know, they'll come up to you and ask for something. Excuse me, do you have any life-extending magic? It's a pretty common request, actually. You may have to hang your head and scuff the ground with your toe and say, well, actually, no. Don't have any of that, sorry. But perhaps you'd like to share a half pint of Guinness with me. I noticed Guinness in Ireland. It doesn't taste like Guinness here. I suppose that's not too surprising, but it's really good there. It's not bad here, but it's really good there. So you might just, you know, share a pint or so with some ordinary folk and commiserate with them that you don't have any life-extending magic to give them. And then, before they know it, perhaps the tree that they thought was dead will be in bloom. And maybe they won't actually notice that either. They'll just feel more at home, and not just because of the Guinness. So something like that, you know, some sort of presence is desperately necessary. It's desperately necessary for us to be bare of head and foot so that we can actually maybe be of help. One afternoon in Belfast, I was escorted around by a lifelong resident who had quite a few horrendous stories to tell about losing this or that family member or neighbor, and about the various ghastly things he had seen. Heard. Things are much better than they were, but I guess, I don't know, I wasn't there really long enough, but the sense is that there's kind of a truce. Although, in a sense, people somewhat have withdrawn to their respective corners. In one corner, some of the Catholics are kind of thinking, well, those guys in the other corner, they were always on top anyway, so what were they complaining about? And in the other corner, some of the Protestants are thinking, gee, did we give up too much? And then some others of them are thinking, what was that all about anyway? So, things are better, but this human tendency to fall to quarreling is not far distant. And for such a quarrel, life-extending magic will be of no help. So our Oxford says that he or she is ever joyous. Which is, that sounds pretty good. But that kind of ever joyous, you know, is not a... particular, easily labeled state of mind. If it becomes that, if that becomes our goal, then we're back in the business of life-extending magic. It's more like this just kind of joyousness is more like even if with our final breath we could appreciate that a dead tree has bloomed. Often when I travel, I don't feel so well. I don't know why that is. It's always been the case. And then when I get home, it takes a while for that to wear off. So right now I don't feel so well, and the temptation, just like this human temptation to fall to quarreling, the temptation is to kind of seize on that and make it something substantial. But to do that is a kind of an insult to the buoyancy of our being. It means we're willing to substitute a small slice of life that we can recognize and think we enjoy in place of its wholeness. And once we do that, pretty soon, we will fall to quarreling. So better to be bareheaded and barefoot. Which is, you know, our sitting practice is like that. Just to sit down in the midst of whatever is emerging is to be bareheaded and barefoot. And to do this over and over again with the same wholehearted spirit is the Buddha way. And if we really devote ourselves to that, then quarrelsomeness and fear-based reactivity and aggression will slowly decline. and the half-dead universe of the standard model is seen to be very, very partial. Instead, the whole world, all worlds, come alive. Well, that's about it. I want to apologize for the shortcomings of my practice and ask for your continued assistance and support. But I'd also like to see if you have any questions or comments. Anybody, it's fine.
How was the food?
The food in England, that the retreat place was, could have been Zen Center, I swear.
It was a Gaia House, right?
Gaia House. It's like, this is like Zen Center food. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty good. And there was plenty of it. And they kept saying that tea, what they call tea, which is like the 5:30 meal, so it was very, what do they call it? Very, light, but no, there's always this huge pot of soup and all this bread and stuff, so I didn't know what they meant by that, but apparently that was a light meal. But it was very good. I stopped short of having something called an Ulster fry when I was in Belfast, which the picture of it made it look quite appalling. I was told this is very genuine, but I thought, no, not this trip, so I can't tell you about that.
The quote from the Oxfordian picture, I think it's the last picture. I don't remember. Is that in every single translation, or is that in a particular?
Well, the version that I looked at, you know, translating Chinese is tricky. So
yeah.
I don't know who did the translation. It's from the Song Dynasty. character who supposedly wrote those poems,
right.
But I didn't do much comparison shopping. So if you know another translation, please, please share.
It's very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to me to think about the concept of everyday people.
Everyday people.
You know, because you really can't. I mean, there's really no way of expressing that without making some sort of a, you know, like kind of a distinction between these people who are, you know, like doing, you know, engaged in this process of herding the ox, and then those everyday people over there.
Ahoy polloi.
Yeah, those lesser beings somehow. And, you know, it's just, I'm trying to think if there's a, you know, if there was any way to express that doesn't create that, you know, kind of a dualistic idea, and I can't think of, I really can't think of any way other than to have not felt separate from everyday people in the first place, you know.
Well, the feeling of that poem and that painting is that the ox herder enters the marketplace, mingles with everyday folk, and disappears, and finally is just one of the ordinary people, him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's a little bit of a fanfare at first, but then even that vanishes. It's like Suzuki Roshi saying, you know, a new priest smells bad for 5 years. And then, the,
uh-oh.
Present company accepted, of course. And then it kind of goes away. And they're just like, sort of like anybody else. So that, I think, is in the direction that you're pointing out. Yes.
He actually said they smell bad for 5 years.
He did say that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He might have said about 5 years. So you can get away with 4.5 or something. You know. You know, it means there's some odor of doing something. I'm doing something cool here. That's what he meant. And that wears off.
They're kind of like stinking of Zen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's like that. For coming today. Thanks to Cheryl and company. I think we have some cookies to eat. And then I think next week we'll have another of our little half day get togethers, starting at bright and early at 5:30. And you're all welcome to attend. And I suppose Zen still has somewhat of this reputation of being like hard and painful, but that's not really our style here, so you needn't think that you'd rather not do that because it's too difficult. So there's always some way to adapt to whatever's happening, always. So anyway, do come if you like, and we'll be done by noon, and then you have the whole lovely Saturday afternoon to play in, if you wish. Having spent the morning in highly meritorious Dharma practice. So, thank you very much.